This is Standing Watch. And now, evangelist Norbert Link.
Greetings, everyone. And welcome back to our Standing Watch program. During our recent trip, my wife and I watched the Little Bighorn battlefield. And I'd like to use this program today to talk a little bit about my impressions, what we can learn from the events of that fateful day, historical misconceptions, and, yes, prophecies for the future. Now, when it comes to the Battle of the Little Bighorn, I'm reading now from an encyclopedia, it's commonly also referred to as Custer's Last Stand. It was an armed engagement between combined forces of Sioux, Cheyenne, and other Indians, and, of course, the 7th Cavalry Regiment of the United States Army. The battle occurred June 25 to 26, 1876, near the Little Bighorn River in eastern Montana Territory. It also says that it was an overwhelming victory for the Cheyenne and Sioux and other Indians, led by several major war leaders, including Crazy Horse, who was inspired by visions of Sitting Bull. It also says that Custer was killed during this battle, as were two of his brothers, a nephew, and a brother-in-law. And all of this seems to be pretty accurate and established. But then the encyclopedia goes on to say that Custer was found with shots to the left chest and left temple. His body was found near the top of Custer Hill, which also came to be known as Last Stand Hill. There, the United States erected a tall memorial obelisk inscribed with the names of the 7th Cavalry casualties. Now, the last comments are highly disputed by historians. And I'd like to bring this out to show that what we accept as historical fact may not always be historical fact. Some years ago, an author by the name of Earl Murray wrote a novel, Flaming Sky, regarding the events of Little Bighorn, and he wrote an interesting afterword, and I'd like to quote from this afterword a little bit. He wrote that George Armstrong's Custer's end at the Battle of the Little Bighorn has been retold many times over. Various military accounts have been used to suggest Custer's whereabouts at certain times during the flight, and during the early stages, the documentation is likely accurate. However, the reality of Custer's last moments is in direct conflict with where he was supposedly found on the battlefield. The truth is, Custer never led his men to Last Stand Hill. He didn't direct a monumental attempt to withstand the charging Sioux and Cheyenne hordes. Unlike the many portrayals of the commander standing on the hill, shooting his pistols, or waving his sword, gravely wounded, urging his troops against insurmountable odds, Custer was certainly not the last man killed, nor was he anywhere in the vicinity. And then the author, with remarkable arguments, goes on to say that he was actually killed what is today the crossing just south of U.S. Highway 212's junction with Interstate 90. He says that Custer was shot at this crossing nearly at the same time that Crazy Horse and Two Moon arrived. His command scattered back into the hills and regrouped in the vicinity of Last Stand Hill, possibly under the next senior officer, Captain George Yates, a strong leader with blonde hair, who was also dressed in buckskins that day. On Last Stand Hill and vicinity, the entire command was wiped out. So he is pointing out that Yates was possibly mistaken for Custer. He says that the majority of historians today no longer subscribe to the notion that Custer led his soldiers down Medicine Tail and then back to Last Stand Hill, where they gave it their best to the end. No, something else occurred. But now notice carefully to his comments here. There was no way the U.S. Army could release the truth, especially if they weren't certain of having found Custer's body. He goes on to say later on in his foreword, or his afterword rather, that a war chief, an Indian war chief, stated that he had killed Custer, for he couldn't mistake his long and wavy yellow hair. And that's where the legend apparently began, that he was actually killed on that hill. Yes, there were soldiers with long wavy yellow hair who died on the Little Bighorn, but none of them was Custer. Back at Fort Lincoln, he had cut his hair short to appease his wife, Libby, who had had a dream of a warrior holding up a scalp with flowing golden locks. Nevertheless, Libby's vision came to pass. Perhaps it could have been avoided, perhaps not. Pretty Shield, a Crow woman married to the Scout, goes ahead, once set. Son of the Morning Star, another name, of course, given to Custer by the Indians, was going to his death and didn't know it. He was like a feather blown by the wind and had to go. Now, I'd like you to carefully remember some of these statements because I'll come back to them in a short while. The question has been asked many times, why Custer did what he did. And here Murray points out, and other authors, of course, have pointed it out as well, that ample evidence exists that the Crow Scouts warned him many times that the village held more warriors than they could handle, that if they attacked without the Terry-given forces they were waiting for, they would all die. However, upon examining the events leading up to the Sioux campaign, it would seem obvious that Custer believed he had no choice but to win a victory for himself against the Sioux and Cheyenne. Foremost, Custer's bitter feud with the Grant administration forced him into a power struggle, a struggle Custer felt he could win only by acquiring the Democratic nomination for president. To gain enough notoriety to be placed on the ballot, he had to perform some heroic feat, like defeating the Sioux and Cheyenne. So his ambition was to become the next American president. It says here that much has also been written and much omitted concerning Custer's personal life. It has been suggested that he was a latent homosexual. Therefore, his personal struggles within himself would have overshadowed even the intense political battles around him, prompting a do-or-die mentality, which unfortunately cost the lives of a great many men he commanded. You see, many times, my friends, personal ambitions in combination with personal weaknesses have caused men and women to do terrible things. Of course, we also have just learned, and we are going to learn in a moment, that apparently there were visions involved and there were ideas involved which allegedly were inspired. Now, they weren't inspired by God. You see, this world is not God's world. This is Satan's world. This is a world plagued by and ruled by demons. And only when Jesus Christ returns, this will change. When we look at the terrible situation over there in the Middle East with the ISIS murderers, these brutal terrorists, we know that they are inspired by demons. There's no other way to explain it. There are demonic forces in that sense. Demons are behind them to do the terrible things they are doing. Now, Murray goes on to say in his statement that today, the Battle of the Little Big Horn is a vivid, or as vivid within the American conscience, as at any time in history. Custer Battlefield is now the Little Big Horn Battlefield in memory of all the fallen. It serves as the West's major landmark to the horrors of interracial war. Men, women, and children died there. It is a sacred place. He goes on to say, today thousands of visitors come to the battlefield each year. They come to learn about the battle and about the lives of the soldiers and the Indians who were camped there. These visitors look across the open hills, feeding the memory of that day, still very much alive, still as horrible as when the actual fighting took place. And into their hearts and minds comes a message from the Creator, let no more events like this happen. Learn to respect one another and live in peace. Very well put. Unfortunately, it's a daydream, because as men will rule men, wars will continue. And as I've said so many, many times, wars will cause more wars. It takes a change of heart that man will begin to learn from their heart that war is wrong. And only when Jesus Christ comes back and when he makes an end to all war, then the heart of man will be changed. And you read this in the book of Isaiah, that man then will not want to learn war anymore, and that they will begin to change their weapons, destroy their weapons, or change them into useful tools of agriculture. That day may not be that far off. But also, in looking at what has happened and looking over the battlefield, I was, of course, immediately reminded of another prophesied war which is going to happen very soon, which the Bible talks about. And I am first of all referring to Armageddon. Now, Armageddon, or Armageddon, is not necessarily a place where a war takes place. It's a place where the armies of the world will assemble. And then they will move towards what is called today the Kidron Valley to fight against the returning Jesus Christ. Now, I like to read a little bit from literature which we have published on the issue, and you can receive a free booklet, by the way, about all of this. It's titled The Mystery of the Book of Revelation. And in this literature, we say that there are kings from the east, as well as all the other kings of the earth. They will be influenced by Satan and the demonically possessed beast, a charismatic political European leader, and the false prophet, who is going to be a religious leader. And all of them will gather at Armageddon, or the Hill of Megiddo, Har meaning hill in Hebrew, about 55 miles or 90 kilometers north of Jerusalem, and about 15 miles or 25 kilometers inland from the Mediterranean Sea. And Megiddo is a huge mound with a commanding view of the long and fertile valley of Jezreel, an ideal place for armies gathering there. And then they will converge from there on Jerusalem to fight the returning Christ. We don't read that there will be a battle at Armageddon. The battle will be fought farther south in the valley of Jehoshaphat, which is called today the Kidron Valley, bordering Jerusalem on the east. But this battle is going to be so much worse than the Battle of Little Bighorn was. How bad that battle was. But listen to this. It says in Revelation chapter 14 that this battle in the Valley of Jehoshaphat, or the Kidron Valley, has to do with the great winepress of the wrath of God being trampled outside the city of Jerusalem. And blood came out of the winepress up to the horses' bridles for 1,600 furlongs, which is about 184 miles in all. Can you imagine that? That much blood flowing that day? Why? Because people being ruled by Satan and demons, not knowing or realizing it perhaps, are willing to fight the returning Jesus Christ. And Christ will return. He will return to restore and establish the kingdom of God, the rule of God on this earth, something which the world has not experienced for the last 6,000 years. That is why we have the Battle of the Little Bighorn. That's why we have subsequent battles. That's why we have all these fights going on, even today, in the Middle East and other places, Ukraine and so on. Because people don't understand the way to peace, as Paul so clearly states. The way to peace they haven't known. Bloodshed is in front of their feet. Well, when we go back to what happened at Little Bighorn, one other thing came to mind, one other thought, and that is that tradition sometimes overrules so heavily the facts. And you can think in terms of Christmas. You can think in terms of Easter. You can think in terms of the idea that Christ was born on December 25, that he was crucified on a Friday, that he was resurrected on a Sunday. None of which the Bible says. None of that is true. Now, Christ most certainly was born. He most certainly was crucified. He most certainly died, but not on those days and events. This is all based on tradition, which then the Catholic Church adopted to include Gentiles who believed those traditions already, to adopt them and to bring them into the fold of Christianity. But you need to know what the truth is. And again, we have literature on that subject, if you really want to know the truth. So please don't be too sure that you know historical facts, even when it comes to Custer's last stand or other things, because you may be surprised when you learn the truth, which might be quite different from what you've always been told. So thank you very much for listening. This is Norbert Link for the Standing Watch program.
Standing Watch is a presentation by The Church of the Eternal God, P.O. Box 270519, San Diego, California, 92198. More information is also available at our website, eternalgod.org.